All right, this Monday, Donald J. Trump will be sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. Shortly thereafter, he will deliver the presidential inaugural address before a crowd of hundreds of thousands in Washington, D.C., and tens of millions watching on television. President Grover Cleveland was most famous for being the only president to serve two non-consecutive terms. Cleveland is both our 22nd and 24th president, and Donald Trump will now be the second president to hold that record. In a book written some years ago, it was called I Do Solemnly Swear Presidential Inaugural Addresses of the Last Five Decades. Focus was about the critical addresses analyzed from all angles, including the political climate, election campaign dynamics, highs and lows of each speech are accurately identified and placed in the appropriate context. Now, Aaron Call is the author of the book, but he's also the director of debate at the University of Michigan. He's also a political commentator. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Dave.
You know, tell folks exactly your role and what you focus on at the University of Michigan.
Yeah, I direct the intercollegiate debate program, and we did win the 2024 national championship, and so that's exciting. I'm coming to you from Hanover, New Hampshire tonight, where we've got an event at Dartmouth College. But in addition to that, I've done several books and on presidential debates and speeches, inaugural addresses to Congress, and so I'm just really fascinated with the history of the genre, how the speeches have evolved, and kind of try to predict what we're going to see in just a few short days.
As I say, these are critical speeches on Inauguration Day. They really set the tone for incoming administrations. You know, President-elect Donald Trump will deliver his address on Monday. President Trump also said his inaugural address will be about unity. And I remember that's what he described his first inaugural address to be, which wasn't quite that. But where do you think he will go? Like, what are your thoughts based on what you know about him, the books you've written about him?
Yeah. No, I think that the 17 address was not very well received. It was mostly known for the American Carnage line. And that's not the mood you want to project in an inaugural. It's supposed to bring the country together, you know, have a solid transition of power and get your administration and legislative agenda off on the right foot. And that didn't happen. But it was a totally different election in 2016. Trump didn't win the popular vote. There were allegations of Russian interference and email hacking. And it was an unexpected victory. But this time, 8 years later, it's totally different. He won the popular vote, made major gains with Latino and black male voters. He's, as you mentioned, the second non-consecutive president after Grover Cleveland. And so he should have the experience and the confidence to deliver a more unifying message, not to just those that voted for him, but the other 50% or so that did not, and explaining why his agenda can benefit everyone and that he has their interests in mind when crafting policy. So, you know, I think you need to be a little skeptical. There have been many talks of the Trump pivot or reset in a lot of different contexts, including debates and relations with Congress. But this definitely is a different time, and I think it'll be a little bit more uplifting and forward-looking, just given the results of the last election, where he's been the last 8 years, and just, you know, the experience he's had while serving in office. I think he's in a better position to kind of meet the major moment of such a large address.
Well, and the pressure is a little bit different. I mean, you know, when you're in your first term, you're working for a second term. I mean, that's really what the viewpoint is of any sitting president in their first term. But, you know, this is it. I mean, he's going to be president for the next 4 years. It does set the tone for the Republican Party. It gives a Democratic Party an opportunity to rebuild and figure out what they're going to do next. But I don't want to say the pressure's off, but it's just a little bit of a different tone, right, going into this inauguration on Monday.
Yeah, definitely a totally different tone. And, you know, I think that first time in 2017, the speech reflected just what was going around him. Some people didn't view him as a legitimate president. There were a lot of marches. And any time that you deal with that kind of adversity, it's natural to, you know, give a speech that's going to be for your base of supporters, trying to rile them up. And it was kind of akin to a campaign speech. But this is different. He should feel very secure in his place. And he's greeted, you know, he's being greeted warmly. The, you know, big companies in tech have warmed up to him, donated money. There's going to be a lot of adulation. And so, you know, those positive feelings that he's getting should reciprocate into this address. But I think the move today to move it inside, I think, is major. We haven't had an inside Capitol address since Ronald Reagan in 1985. Much smaller audience, more intimate setting, maybe a little bit more like a State of the Union, even though it's only 15 to 20 minutes. So such a radical change because of the weather so quickly could cause him to have to change the speech a little bit, and it'll just be a different audience. We won't have the hundreds of thousands of people outside, and it'll be unique. And so it'll be interesting to see how he can adapt to those ever-changing variables that he has to deal with.
I was looking in 1841, President William Henry Harrison was sworn into office on a very similar cold and blustery day. He rode a horse to and from the Capitol building without a hat or overcoat. His speech lasted 1 hour and 40 minutes, which is, I believe, still the longest inauguration speech in American history. And then he caught pneumonia and he died days later, a week later. It wasn't very long.
No, it was about a month, maybe a few weeks or a month later. That's considered the worst inaugural address of all time. Certainly the longest. And yeah, it's a little bit of controversial about how he exactly died. I think that there was some White House water and sewage issues that may have contributed it to. But, that's not what you want to emulate. And we've also seen some really short ones. George Washington's second one was only 135 words. Abraham Lincoln had one of the most famous inaugural addresses in 1865 as the Civil War was winding down, and that was only 700 words. John F. Kennedy, which he played at the beginning, 1961, was only about a 14-minute speech. And so sometimes brevity is the key to these. You want a signature line or two, something his speech is going to be remembered for. But this is not, you know, an hour-plus address to a joint session of Congress. This is kind of short and to the point, and talk about governing philosophy, maybe pay homage to some past presidents. There's often some biblical religious overtones to it. Just, I think he played some great clips of thanking the previous president for their service, even potentially his opponent, Kamala Harris, who will be in attendance. This is only the second or third time the address is on Martin Luther King holiday. He could say something nice about Dr. King or even Jimmy Carter, who passed away very recently and who attended his last 2017 inauguration. So there's a lot of things that set up well for Trump to extend some olive branches, garner some goodwill, and really get the second and final term off to a really good footing.
I will say that for those who don't know, like, the inauguration will begin with a service at St. John's Church on Monday morning, Lafayette Square, a historic Washington, D.C. church, followed by tea at the White House. Musical performances and opening remarks are set to begin at 8:30 Chicago time. And that will be followed by the swearing in of Trump and Vance inside the Capitol Rotunda. And there's so much tradition here, too. You know, the Bibles that Trump will use is a personal Bible given to him by his mother in 1955. The historic Lincoln Bible, a velvet-bound volume used at President Abraham Lincoln's inauguration in 1861. Then he will head to the president's room near the Senate chamber to sign documents. He'll then attend a lunch hosted by the Joint Congressional Committee on inaugural ceremonies, and followed by a parade that goes from the Capitol building down Pennsylvania Avenue to the White House. Not clear how that will go or if it'll be adapted for security reasons. And then later he will be at three inaugural balls throughout the city, the Commander-in-Chief Ball, the Liberty Inaugural Ball, and the Starlight Ball, and he's expected to speak at all three. We are talking to Aaron Call, Director of Debate at the University of Michigan. And, you know, looking back at a couple pivotal speeches in our history, Abraham Lincoln gave his first inaugural address a month before the start of the Civil War, which is amazing.
Yes, he gave both 1861, 1865, right, the very beginning and very end of the Civil War, just the timing. And it was so difficult. He was trying to keep the country together and then causing reconciliation at the end, appealing in the first address to better angels, talking about no malice. People just such eloquent verbiage in his addresses, and he's then been quoted by future presidents. But it really kind of helped keep the country and bring the country back together. And it was just so unfortunate he wasn't able to see through after that second inaugural address. You know, was assassinated just about 30 days after. But yes, his starting with George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, then Abraham Lincoln, all the way then through Franklin Delano Roosevelt that you played at the beginning. Those are some of the classic ones. And, you know, these have existed since the beginning of time, and this will be, Trump's will be the 60th total one. And they're just iconic. And some of the words will, you know, live on forever. And that's why the presidents usually start sketching these out in November, December. They go through numerous drafts. And because they're very short in terms of both time and word count, but you want to make sure that everything is exactly how you want to project your vision to the country in a really important time.
Yeah, and we're talking about presidential speeches for the last 200 and almost 50 years. So, I mean, these are iconic, and they are studied, and they are remembered. Former President Jimmy Carter, who just passed away, needed to address really something different. For him, it was about the public trust of government coming out of, you know, Nixon and then later Ford.
Yes, in a very tough campaign with Gerald Ford, and I believe he's, one of the things with his address, he quoted one of his elementary school teachers in terms of just some good, you know, values to live by. And yes, he was a very, very eloquent speech. And I really hope that just given that he passed away recently in December and Trump was there, we saw at the funeral, that Trump could pay homage to him, in some way. Maybe use a quote from that 1977 address. It'd be a great way to honor him, just given the close proximity of that. But after a really tough election where Ford was there after the impeachment, he tried his best to bring the country back together. And one unique thing is we're on the verge right now of this Middle Eastern hostage deal that may take place either the day of or right after the inauguration starts. And that's almost the identical scenario.
Yes.
For Ronald Reagan in 1981, as Jimmy Carter was leaving office, the hostage deal occurred, and Jimmy Carter then went to Germany to visit with the troops with the assistance of Ronald Reagan. So when presidents, even of different administrations and parties, come together at those times of inauguration, those are a great example for the country to see.
I say either unite or divide in these speeches. George Washington talked about a strong sense of duty and the people's role in the Republic's success. George W. Bush, you know, thanked Bill Clinton, but also complimented Vice President Gore, who had beaten Bush by the popular vote, on his spirit and grace. And then there's Andrew Johnson, who was impeached, and his speech and was all about division, especially with Ulysses S. Grant in that as well. Aaron Call is a director of debate at the University of Michigan. Thank you always for your insight. Enjoy your travels this weekend, and I look forward to talking again.
Anytime. Always love it. Take care.